Hello, everyone. Welcome to session 3 of A New Republic of the Heart, a guide to being the change for real with Terry Patton. My name is Sherry, and I'm part of the Terry Patton support team. We have moved to Zoom meeting, so there are a few differences in how we'll be interacting online today. Please do leave your camera off until we invite you to ask a question or when we move into small groups, and then we'll all come together at the end to say goodbye on video. Video can be distracting, so we do ask that you refrain from eating, smoking, or moving around during class. And as well, for the audio experience, please do use headphones or a headset for your best audio experience and to minimize background noise and ensure the best quality sound and recording. You will be muted throughout the call until we call on you or when we move into our small group discussions. And we warmly invite you to ask questions and share your thoughts in a couple of different ways. So Zoom meeting works a little bit different than webinar. So if you do wish to interact live with Terry, please raise your hand electronically so we're sure to see you, because sometimes you might want to wave your hand thinking that you're on video, but if you raise electronically, we're sure to see you. So to raise your hand, go to the bottom of your Zoom window to the navigation bar. You might have to hover there for a moment and then click on participants. Once you click on participants, a white panel will appear to the right side of your Zoom window. And then all the way at the bottom of that participant panel, you'll see the button that says raise hand. It's just in blue text. And you're welcome to click on that now, just to see how it works. And then, of course, you can lower your hand when you're complete with that. And I will lower all of the hands before Terry calls on you for questions and your thoughts. Now, if you're on iPad or mobile app, just tap your screen and you'll see a more button in, it should be in the bottom right. If you click on more, the raise hand option will appear there. And once again, feel free to experiment with that now. And if you've joined us by telephone, the number to press is *9. So you're welcome to press *9 and we can call on you that way if you've joined us by telephone. If you prefer to submit a written question, please use the chat button. So there is a chat button in that navigation bar at the bottom. And if you're on iPad or mobile device, just tap and you'll see the little chat bubble. So go ahead and submit your question or thoughts there. And again, you're welcome to try that out now too. Your questions will come directly to Terry and myself. So we'll see them when you pop them in. And finally, before we bring Terry on, if the session should freeze up on you or if you get disconnected, simply click the Leave Meeting button that appears in red text in the bottom right of your Zoom window. And if you're on iPad or mobile app, just tap your screen. Leave Meeting will appear in the upper left. And once you've left the meeting, quit all other programs. And just a hint, it may be a good idea to close out of all other programs now and any other apps that may be running on your machine or device, and then use the same link to come back into the session. All right, wonderful. I'll have more instructions for you later when we move into our small group discussions, but I think that's enough to handle for now. And now let's get started with you, Terry. Welcome.
Okay, good. Thanks so much, Sherry. So glad I have your help with all these things. I wouldn't be able to handle it all. So welcome, everybody. And let's begin by dropping in, by transitioning from whatever busyness we may have been involved with up until now. So I invite you to find your way into a comfortable sitting position and take a few breaths. Let your attention just soften and drop into the body with every out breath. Enjoy another wave of relaxation into being just present. and the simplicity, the pleasurable simplicity of just sitting and relaxing. And as you breathe, or maybe in a sense, as you let yourself be breathed by this mystery that is beating our hearts, and there, here, in every now, sparking our intelligence, not different from awareness itself. Relax, allow yourself to be held by being itself. And let go. Compassionately of this tendency to think, to be focused in thought. And as you let go into just being, the inherent goodness, the inherent okayness of being itself is always here. Underneath whatever pain or agitation or stress, there's a profound okayness into which we can just keep relaxing. And we can really let go into this okayness, even more perhaps than usual, because we are secure that we are not simply bypassing reality with our spirituality. Because we are committed to life itself, as well as being, when we let go into being, we can let go completely. To this level of reality in which there is no problem. It's inherently joyous and loving and blissful, in which the conscious light that is the substance of us and all moments is allowed to be felt and known. Allowing ourselves to be deepened into contact with this sacredness and divinity. In whatever ways are authentic for us. So, enjoying this field of fellowship, this brother sisterhood, let's also engage. So please raise your hand and we'll wait until somebody's ready to interact live. So please feel very much invited to raise your hand. And until that happens, let's just keep deepening into this. Mysterious profundity in which we are always held.
There's Eric. Hi, Eric. I'm going to unmute you. And if you can start your video camera, we'll bring you on. There you are.
Hello.
Hi, Eric. Nice to meet you.
Nice to see you, Terry. So what has been coming up for me, as I've been engaged with this chapter, and it goes back to also the sacred activism weekend that I did with Andrew Harvey, but being able to find the self-care balance so that activism burnout is something that becomes a practice to let go of, instead of something that just gives you carpet burn that lasts for too long. And my experience, my major burnout experience, was being president of the Iowa Renewable Energy Association, a nonprofit, with a green board, and trying to move the green swamp basically back down into healthy blue and get some structure, and then move it through green to sort of try to get at least a foothold of integral. And I was deeply exit green and still am. I mean, I'm still neck deep. I still like Shirley MacLaine. That was a burnout experience. And now I'm trying to get back into activism, and there's the contraction. Every time I go forward, the contraction from the last burnout experience.
Sure. Well, you know, all of this is asking for us to practice more and more profoundly in ways that are more and more truly integral. And a truly integral practice isn't exclusively self-focused. The fact that you tried so hard that you put the service you were doing ahead of your own well-being attests to your care for the whole. And it's important that you honor and appreciate the goodness in your motivation, even though the circumstance shows you the necessity of another level of maturity, you know, and you're growing. And that sense that you're involved in a process that's always teaching you that this life is a school, and that our attempts to be effective activists, none of them have been as effective, no matter who you are. I mean, even if you were Bill McKibben or, you know, who Jerry Brown and his leadership with California's recent commitments to, you know, 0% net carbon. Nothing is enough. Every one of us, you know, is in this koan, this impossible question of how we can be more effective than we are. And so there's a healthy thing of experiencing that as a kind of teleological pressure, a kind of inherent pressure. And yet that easily becomes a burden to us, and we begin to feel like we have, like I know less than you need to practice exactly what I teach. And in my sense that I had articulated something in a new way that was important in this book, and that getting this message out was so important. And I've recently gone through a period of, you know, I'm having to steer back toward self-care and toward my own wholeness, because we do have to put our own oxygen mask on first. The vehicle that we are has to be fundamentally, basically healthy. And yet if we always prioritize ourselves over the whole, we just end up another selfish middle-class privileged person, you know, particularly if, like you and me, you're white and male and over 40, you know, you're kind of the face of the problem, so to speak, at least viewed from some progressive perspectives. And it's necessary for us to question ourselves and go beyond our contentment and our passivity and the way we're consoled by all of the unsustainable dynamics of our lives. So that this self-questioning is really healthy, and yet contact with that which restores us is absolutely essential too. And so it's easy for one of these to get ahead of the other, for us to get out of balance in one way or another. Most people tend toward, some activists really do need to be reminded of self-care. And yet most of us need to become more effective activists. And how we can manage that without going into a dark place is a big part of this course. We'll get into this a whole lot more, particularly in chapter 6. But what I want to bring forward most strongly right now is the first thing I said about self-compassion and appreciating and honoring the impulse that caused you to get burned out in the first place. Because a kind of fundamental respect for and compassion for ourselves is crucial to steering either way in this course correcting that we have to do. Steering more toward activism is only possible if we're, well, it's only possible for us to do it in a healthy way if we're fundamentally self-friendly. And it's only possible for us to do it in a way that has some measure of dignity and restraint and care for the whole as well. Either the whole or the self is only held in a healthy way if we continually wake up from the ways that we get ourselves jammed in these zero-sum push-pull dynamics, where either I'm making a sacrifice that makes me unhappy or I'm feeling guilty. And we have to wake up from those kinds of self-limiting dynamics. We have to accept the fact that this is who we are and this is where we are. And we are beginning in the mud. We're pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps. So the fact that it's not perfect, the fact that we have ground to cover, is to be honored. The fact that we're facing that with honesty and we're actually attending this school of life, we recognize what time it is on the planet and the urgency of us breaking into another level of effectiveness, is a challenge. It's a psychic challenge. And so we're coping with a lot, and that deserves to be respected and honored. And if we can hold this with a kind of self-honoring perspective, we can do it. But we easily get drawn into dynamics where we're down on ourselves, either in guilt or in pushing ourselves too hard. And we really do have to wake up from that completely. There is joy at the center of effective activism. There is fundamental health. There is contact with that uncaused happiness, and restoring ourselves to that and restoring our self-friendliness in a very ordinary psychological sense, as a practice, many times a day, perhaps, because the old patterns die hard. And so this needs to constantly be reasserted. And I appreciate, I can feel how this is a real question. And so we're having the kind of conversation that this is all about. And I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I don't see another hand up right now. I think I want to answer one question from last week's session that's actually quite relevant to this week. And then maybe we can go into some small groups and interact with each other. During the previous session, somebody who didn't give his or her name asked, as one who has lived in a trance bubble vis-a-vis spiritual bypass or just plain numbing out, intellectually and wholeheartedly, I agree with activated community being the appropriate response through this mess we are in. But emotionally, I'm terrified to let go of my sense of privacy, my complacent safety, and misanthropic judgment of human ignorance. I do not have a bodhisattva orientation yet, but I do want to participate. How does one identify a particular contribution in the midst of so much aversive conditioning? Well, I think that for one thing, I love this question because it's very self-aware and self-challenging. And again, I honor that. And I think, what we have to recognize is that there is as if a marketplace of values and a marketplace of ideas and a marketplace of motivations that work themselves out. And if we're actually participating in the dynamics, there's a kind of as our inner voices of aversive voices or courageous, heroic voices, our intellectual integrity contending with our attachment to our comforts. If all of those voices get a chance to have their conversations and to work out their controversies, there is an inherent directionality to what comes about. That's why there are levels of development that actually proceed in a particular direction. There is a kind of values gravity, Steve McIntosh's term, toward goodness and truth and beauty. So if you're being honest with yourself in this way, there are some things that you will find that you can do. Your sense of privacy, your complacency, your safety, your judgmentalness. The fact that you're using those harsh words to describe aspects of how you're oriented means that you can't really stay there. If you stay in this consideration, you will evolve. Later in the book, later in one of the future sessions, I'll talk about this kind of a catch line that I came up with, which is to understand where your most powerful activism can go. I say, follow your heartbreak and your genius with your friends. Your heartbreak being where your care directs you and what values really inspire a response from you. And following your genius, noticing what you are good at, where your capacities mobilize, what inspires and engages you. And you're going to find a place that includes both of those. And do that with your friends. You know, there's this other great line from the Protestant theologian Georg Büchner, the place where your, your deep gladness meets the hunger of the world, I think is the phrase. So there's a finding forward of more and more of your capacity and your willingness. But time is moving. There is something that is an imperfect version of that that's coming along, and waiting for the perfect expression is a little too precious. So being willing to make yourself a little bit uncomfortable, even as you honor the fact that these are parts of your experience, and find your way into an engagement that brings you alive. This is our task. So if you begin to do that, you're going to begin to discover, luckily, you know, the happiness research shows it's when we're engaged on behalf of something greater than ourselves that our own happiness comes alive. And so you're going to begin to discover that the consoled contentment that you're tending toward is actually not as fulfilling as some measure of engagement on behalf of something greater than yourself. And as that circuitry begins to have some energy flowing in it, you're going to discover a self-validating dimension of how activism actually can make you happier. It isn't all hardship. In fact, that goodness is filling you as well. Okay. I want to invite other questions. I think that the live questions are the kind of one of the most dynamic things, but let's store them for a little bit and go into little groups of three. And Sherry and I will set this up, but Sherry, if you could come on and explain the basic procedure. We'll just go into this for a little more than 15 minutes and come back to the large group. But I want us to have a chance to interact on some of these issues so that everybody is speaking and bringing themselves personally into the process. So what I'd like you to do in your, each of you will have a 5-minute turn, and what I'm hoping you'll do is to speak for 4 minutes and then leave a minute for others to respond, and so there's some interaction. And in those 4 minutes, in a very summary way, and it's kind of cool to have these time limits. You know, if we're just totally relaxed, we stretch out, we talk at length, but if we have to really bring, you know, it's kind of a practice to bring yourself in a very real way and say what a lot and bring yourself forward in a time efficient way. So I'm suggesting that in those 4 minutes, you can cover quite a bit. First, just the facts briefly, like what is your history with activism? Was that in the system activism, like politics, candidates, organizing for laws or for local initiatives, against the system, protesting, around the system, maybe charity or other creative social entrepreneurship? And what are your feelings? And you probably have many, sometimes maybe contradictory feelings about activism. What ways are you inspired by it? In what ways do you feel discouraged? Or in what ways are you conflicted? We've all had a complex experience with activism. And then bring it up to the present moment. So it's your history, your feelings, and then the third is, how are you growing and changing in your relationship to activism now? How are the inner work and the outer work coming together for you? So we'll put those up on the screen too, I think. And then the other thing is, you know, some people, when I've done this sort of a thing before, we used to just do it with an audio link with no video, and we'd use a platform called Maestro Conference. And sometimes people didn't want to participate in the breakouts, and they'd be able to raise their hand and opt out. We don't have that ability in Zoom, so we kind of have to either do them and involve everybody or not. So if you're in a moment where you feel like you don't want others to see you, you don't want to be visually visible, that's okay, but no matter what, I hope you will be willing to participate, because the people who are put into this group of three with you will really benefit a great deal. And the practice here is as much in the listening as in anything else. I think all of us have had the experience of walking away from a conversation and feeling like it was an amazing conversation and feeling all this gratitude and respect for the person we spoke with, mainly because of the way their listening helped us to find our way into speaking our truth. And so the practice here in a way is to bring that kind of listening to one another. So again, to summarize, 4 minutes of talking, and you'll get a little visual reminder, and then have a minute just to interact. And we're going to want to cover our history of activism, our feelings about it, and what's happening for us now. What's our inquiry? What's our sense of possibility? Hi, everybody. Thank you. So I'm curious if anybody has any comments to make. I was in one of the breakout groups myself. It's a little bit of a new situation. There may have been some awkwardness over the logistics, but I hope we got to a place where we were able to begin to share and to begin to sense that there is a rich international community of fellow, you know, what are we? We're students of the paradox, and we're also stewards of the future in training. I hope that some sense of that fellowship has arisen for you. Does anybody want to share anything that's come up? I think it might be a nice time for us to have some live interaction. Please, I guess raising your hand isn't what you get to do. You chat your interest in speaking. Is that right, Sherry?
Either is welcome. It'd be wonderful to have people raise hands and share what they learned and what they experienced with others.
Good. Yeah, raising hand. Oh, so you do have, because I'm a facilitator, I don't have a raise hands thing, but others do. Okay, good. So yeah, please engage.
Yeah, we have Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Terry. I think, can you hear me this time?
Yeah, I can.
So the question that I was wanting to bring up last week, and it kind of bleeds into this too, is, you know, there are a lot of us that have very various kinds of circles, and yet it's still like a meeting of silos. And I haven't gotten to the part of the book where you talk about the particular kind of we space practice that you use, but the thing that I'm looking for is practices that help small circles, even these when we break out later, of how do we get in a space that, you know, kind of like at Yellow, can bracket over opposing positions and find commonality and help move conversations forward.
Well, it's, you know, that's a very big question that I, in some sense, you know, I wrote a lot about it. I've written academic articles about it. I participated in a big We Space summit. There are a lot of different approaches, and there's a lot to share about it. I think in this moment of our process, you know, we'll get into it in a lot of richness and depth in future weeks, but we're also meeting in the meantime. So it's a very important question to ask right now. And I can say a few things. One thing is, it's really important at the beginning to make this transition into depth. And part of that is everyone finding themselves sincerely into a place of genuine curiosity and learning. The fact is, we are, you know, the biggest challenge in each of our lives, in some sense, is the biggest challenge in everybody else's life. We're all in this together. The biggest challenges are, how do we become a different kind of human being and how do we graduate to a different level of maturity? And none of us knows that completely. Everybody is in that question together. And so there's a kind of vulnerability and humanity that's a necessary part of this. In spiritual circles, there's an awful lot of discourse that takes the form of somebody going into their most enlightened state of mind and speaking as if they're enlightened and speaking the qualities of clarity and unity or whatever. And there's a space for some of that to happen, I think, appropriately. But very often there's a spiritual bypass in that because people aren't only that enlightened being. They're also a complex person who's got all kinds of ego, unmet ego needs and early life trauma and attachment issues and habits of avoidance and compensatory motivations. This shadow. And every one of us has some, we bring some measure of that to the party. So I think that the ground that works for a we to come together requires us to show up as people who are human, who are not hiding their humanity or the fact that they are a work in progress and the fact that they are continually learning. All of that has to be kind of what we bring to the party because that creates the opening for contact. And there's a kind of leadership that we bring by being vulnerable, by being courageous enough to speak to the places where we're, not to speak only of the lessons we already learned that we're on the other side of, but to speak of the lessons that are currently in our life that we haven't finished learning. That is a form of leadership and courage and generosity that isn't as commonly appreciated in our social worlds most of the time. And so I hope this course creates a context for those of you who are in book study groups or just when we do something like this little breakout group we just finished, where we lead through that kind of generosity and curiosity. Because, you know, looking at the introductions, many people have introduced themselves on our Facebook group. I hope more of us will do that. There's a lot of depth and a lot of experience and a lot of very interesting human beings who are drawn into this course. This is, you know, we might just look like an ordinary, whatever, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 year old, you know, ish person. But what's embedded is worth being curious about and worth being interested in. And the potentials for an intelligence to come about that is not you, not me, but in the intersubjective space between is really exciting. So that openness to and willingness and generous curiosity is what we can begin to bring. Now, the we is going to be a work in progress. And so it's going to require, it does require a certain amount of patience. You know, I frequently retell this cliche of a joke, you know, I love humanity, but people drive me crazy. We do disappoint each other. Like part of the challenge of the we space is to show up at the best, at the most conscious, most awake, you know, like using that we as an opportunity to really show up as your best self is another piece of the practice. And there's no series of injunctions, there's no formula. It's got to be something alive and emergent. And so that sense of the possibility of the living quality of the next now moment and what can happen is another piece of what we can bring. But this is a conversation we'll keep having. And so I thank you for asking it. That was a partial answer, and we'll be back into this conversation more in the time ahead. Yeah, thank you, Gary.
Great. We have Marjorie next. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi. Yes, when we were in our breakout group, it was my turn to speak. And, you know, all of a sudden I just became very present in the moment. And what's happening for me in this moment that I believe I shared on Facebook also is that where I happen to be living in the location that I'm at is we're about to get hit by a major hurricane in the next 36 hours. It's coming right here.
Wow.
And, so I'm in North Carolina on the East Coast and I'm 85 miles inland, but this particular storm is going to be coming inland. I'm a survivor of Hurricane Andrew in South Florida years ago. And this is not my first spin around the block for this particular type of Mother Nature's force, but I'm looking at this as sort of initiation again, another initiation. And that, my goodness, the things that come up, I mean, you do all the preparations, you know the drill, you look after your family members, your neighbors. It's an opportunity actually to experience the very best of human nature in many instances, because it brings out the best in our community. We're looking after each other, we're checking on each other, and at the same moment we're fighting for the last bottle of water in the grocery store, you know, or something. So it's we're sitting in our cars waiting in line to get gas and all kinds of stuff like that. So it's an opportunity for me personally to practice showing up at my best, and also allowing for the moments when the fear does come in, and allowing myself to experience the fear, you know. And Mother Nature is, she's got her own force and intention, I believe. And it's just such constant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're all her children, students, and hopefully devotees, you know, caring beloveds.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's a there's an opportunity here just to send our goodwill, our, you know, healing intentions, protective intentions to you and to everyone else there. And I hope that you'll share with us whatever lessons you learn through the process itself. I like how you're relating to it. And blessings, Marjorie. May you be safe. Yeah. So I'm not sure I see any other hands raised right at the moment. There are a couple more questions that I wanted to take on that have been asked.
And I think, Terry, sorry to jump in there, but yes. Grant's just not sure of how to raise his hand electronically, so he's chatted me to ask if he could come on. So shall we bring him on now, or would you like to address the other question?
Let me address this question, and then I'll take Grant. That'd be great. Chip asked, I think, a really good question. He said, we could do 12 weeks on this chapter alone. My question is about the paragraph on victimhood and trauma on page 62. You write, to the degree that our trauma has impaired us, it is imperative that we recover enough to end the cycle of injury and trauma. I hear a lot of truth in this, and yet I'm also detecting a tiny bit of privilege. This is nearly my only disagreement with Ken and Integral. It focuses a great deal on the upper left and pays too little heed to the lower right, in my opinion. I'm fortunate to have the ability and resources to heal my trauma and end the cycle, but I don't think we can expect people in generational poverty with marginalized identities to end any cycle. Some of the people they must engage really are perpetrators of their trauma. It may be that this course is not applicable to our human cousins in such straits. If so, I think that bears explicit mention. Thank you for listening. Well, you know, Chip, I think this is one of those what are called enduring polarities. You know, there's something called polarity management theory, and it has to do with the fact that there are some polarities that are good, bad. Like we want more love and less hate. That's a good, bad polarity. But then there are many polarities that are enduring, the individual and the collective, the mind and the heart. You need both of many, many polarities. And I think that there's a background here. When we get into the chapter on integral politics, the left liberal position tends to emphasize systemic causes for social problems, and the right tends to focus on individual responsibility. But this is an enduring polarity. There's definitely important truth on both sides. When I'm in conversation with any individual, I'm going to be doing my best to encourage that person to find their way to recover enough to end the cycle of injury and trauma. And it only happens in the life of an individual when that individual becomes resourced enough that they can do that. So that's the way in which conservatives are right. We do have to take individual responsibility. And of course, there's the way that we progressives are right. There are all kinds of systemic causes, and that's what you're giving voice to. And therefore, at the level of policy, at the level of allocation of resources, at the level of some measure of compassion, we have to recognize these systemic causes are enormous. I think what we have to do as individuals, and mostly we're more progressive minded, I think, in this course, although probably not universally, we have to question our, because we're part of a progressive social group that has its own progressive attitudes, we'll tend to get involved in the groupthink on our side of the political spectrum. And in that, it becomes, you have no right to speak if you're a privileged white person or male or middle-class person or whatever. You just don't understand the suffering and marginalization that others have suffered. And really, you just need to listen to their experience and understand their experience. It becomes an absolutizing thing. This is the phenomenon we see on college campuses where conservative speakers aren't even allowed to speak, or where classes don't allow, they call on people, what are they call on LGBTQ Muslim women with handicaps, before anybody else. And the more marginalized, the more disadvantaged you are, the more respected you are, the more your voice is given preference. And I'm a white male in my 60s. I would never get to speak in such classes. And that takes things too far. And we can all sense that it becomes kind of doctrinaire. So there's something about presencing these that brings up our tribal identities and tribal attitudes and tribal allegiances. And we don't want to be the person who's accused of being an unconscious beneficiary of white supremacy and somebody who's, our fear of being called whatever it is, racist or sexist or something, has many progressive people kind of stampeding into a kind of politically correct stance that is not healthy. So I, if I'm speaking to any individual, I stand with what I wrote in that chapter. We still have to find our way past it and become a source of responsibility. That's still what's real for any individual. But when it comes to governmental policy, or when it comes to social and political choices, then obviously I have a lot of resonance with what you're saying. So I hope that's helpful. And yes, Grant, I'd love to hear from you. Please come on.
Okay, here's Grant.
Hey, Terry. Hi, everyone. And before I say anything else, Marjorie, be well. our thoughts and prayers are with you. I was in a group with Chip and Ed, and I just was going to make two quick points with regards to finding our strength and finding our way in as activists, whether we're in the system, around the system, against the system. Chip shared with Ed and I this difference that you've helped me understand so well, Terry, which is this difference between seeking and practicing. And I think when we deal with these issues of burnout, as the activist vein, there's a kind of a refuge when we characterize and feel our way into our activism as a form of practice, where essentially surrendering to that identity is or can be kind of its own reward. And that leads to the second point, where I think it's useful to redefine our idea of success. It's not necessarily reaching some kind of end point or objective or goal by such and such a date. Recognizing that these problems may be multi-generational in nature, that, you know, and we all need to sort of lean our shoulder into the wheel to be a force for change, but to hold our, you know, surrender the fruits, as they say, to God or the universe or whatever, that there's a holding lightly to outcome. And by redefining our idea of success as alignment with our deepest truth, that by living that authentically, that we can find both the kind of the gumption and the energy to keep working on these challenging issues that we're all facing without slipping into burnout. And I think holding it as a form of practice is one way to do that. That it's not practice for the big game that's coming in 2 or 3 months' time or however long, but rather practice sadhana, spiritual practice, is the same way that a doctor practices medicine or a lawyer practices law. It's what we do because it's who we are. And that there's a certain kind of an okayness by being in process, but not trying to hold on to the fruit.
That's right. We are all a work in progress. And in fact, there's what we can hold as a culture together is a great deal of respect for others who present themselves as being in the process of learning and practicing possibilities beyond what we have realized. In fact, this is a super important point, and it expands on things that we've said earlier. So maybe this is a theme of this session. I sometimes give people a practice to look at, you know, go to a public place where people are walking by and to look at people as they walk by, recognizing them as cartoon characters and recognizing that the most preposterous and silly and ridiculous thing about every human being is the way in which they sort of try to look like they've got it together, because they're obviously a silly, goofy cartoon character. That's the only kind of people that are made in this world. Every one of us is, in a way, like the lack of humor about ourselves that we project in trying to be somebody who's got it together is probably the silliest of all things about us. So that there's something of a humorous, even affectionate, amused kind of willingness to be the flawed, you know, everybody's a little exaggerated in some way, you know, a caricature artist would blow up our lips or my bald head or what, some part of us would become more exaggerated, the nose, and, you know, whatever. And for us to cease to be embarrassed about that and become friends at a whole different level because we accept that is one of the core ingredients in a different kind of we space and in a different kind of attitude. And the attitude then that we're practicing, not to have it together and look good and all of that all the time, but practicing to be more authentic, generous, and awake and excellent. And, you know, and the world needs us to be the very best versions of ourselves. It's weird that this, we have to become more serious than ever. And the only way to do that is to become more humorous than ever. And how cool is that? Well, I'm noticing that we're at the end of what was our stated time. I'm noticing that all these sessions seem to want to go on longer. So I want to do a snap poll right now. How many of you can stay later and would like to, so that we might have, you know, can we begin to turn these into 90-minute rather than 75-minute sessions? So, Sherry, is that something that you can set up right on the spot?
It'll take a moment, but we
There's something else we want to do before the session is over, and I'll do it right now while you're setting that up. We'll take the poll, and then after that, we'll all come on with our video feeds, and we'll say goodbye, as many as are still able to stay on the line. Tom, I see you raised your hand. I'd love to take your call. I'm not sure we'll have time, but if you write it in, I'd love to engage with you. The next chapter is called Wholeness and Fragmentation. And it's a really important and uplifting chapter. In some ways, it's an emotional riposte to this focus on activism in chapter two. And it's a very, very rich one. I hope you'll spend some time with the reflection questions as well as the chapter itself. Everything is now, I think, uploaded. And there's something else, which is I've uploaded another asset to this week. The week on activism has its resources in one place, and the week on wholeness and fragmentation, chapter three, is separate. That, in this week's material, there's an extra handout on activism. You know, we didn't talk about our specific activist engagements as much as I had expected us to in today's session. I want to, as much as it can be an assignment, I'd like every one of us, during at least the time of this course, and certainly those of us in the United States, because we have these very important midterm elections, I hope you'll engage very directly. So I've got a handout on ways that you can be involved in the system, political activism, which is, I think, a moral obligation for every one of us. So during these important midterms, there is something that every one of us can do no matter what. Even if you're off by yourself, alone, and you'd have nobody to organize with, and you're in some remote place, you can do this. It's called Postcards to Voters, and you can connect in and help turn out the vote, in particularly in places where the vote is likely to be closer. And so there's a link for that. And there's a link to a variety of other resources. Some of them are transpartisan. Some of them are more philosophical. There's also going to be an opportunity to get engaged with me and with a new nonprofit that I'm starting. And I'll be telling you more about that in the weeks ahead. But I hope that all of us will take on our responsibilities as citizens. Those of us who are Americans have a special responsibility. This is a very international community. And one thing I feel very keenly in my relationships with my friends who don't live in the United States is how much, as a participant in a so-called democratic process, you know, not always perfect, in this country, because it is a superpower, we have a responsibility to all our international friends to turn this around. We have fallen down on the job. We let a completely irresponsible power block that is, it's hard to exaggerate just how negative its implications are. And we have to take responsibility. So that's a very important thing. And there's a handout specifically on that. But of course, the context of that is what we began this session by emphasizing, which is the unconditional well-being and joy and happiness that are the foundation of practice, of being a practitioner. We have to find our way into that. And so that's what we're going to focus on in next week's session on wholeness and fragmentation. And I'm excited that we're about to open into that. And all that material is there on the course homepage now. We've gotten that together. I think the questions I ask about this are quite provocative and deep. If you're not in a group, I still hope you'll take a look at them and really reflect on them, I think it'll deepen your appreciation for the paradoxes and potentials of the ideas in this chapter. Well, thank you for spending this time with me. I think what we all need to do now is to bring this to an end, so it really will be done before 1:30 Pacific. So please turn on your video feeds and unmute yourselves. And Sherry, and then please also go to your upper right-hand corner of your screen and hit gallery view. And let's all come on and say goodbye to each other. So go ahead, find, it's in the lower left that you can unmute yourself. And
I'll unmute everyone on the count of 3, 2, 1.
Oh, you will, good.
Okay, here we go. Okay. In 3, 2, 1.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Good
to see you.
Thank you.
Nice to be part of our community of practice in this way. This is one of my favorite things about switching to Zoom meeting is we get to do this. Peering in at all of you.
Cool.
How delightful. Fantastic.
Great meeting. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you, everybody.